everybody, and welcome to River Talk, a podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weissa. This week, once again, Priscilla is out hiking into some random creek or river in the middle of nowhere to probably scrape her boat down. So we have a guest host, Aaron Cavanolio. Aaron is with us as our guest host and California correspondent to give us all sorts of updates on the things happening in the Golden State. So we like to start off with news of the week. So Aaron, what's your news of the week?
Well, I'll just start with California. I mean, big news is that we're starting off with a pretty good snowpack here this year. I think in the Southern Sierra, it's like 129% of normal, and it's a little less going north, but still over 100% normal. So we're on our way to another good river season, hopefully.
Yeah. In Oregon, it's been pretty bad, except the Oahe. Eric, did you see the Oahe is like 110%?
Yeah, the Oahe is looking awesome, which is super exciting. I was really shocked by that.
I was
in Idaho, the salmon's at like 75 or something, which you know is better than I expected to be honest. So
it's better than zero.
So,
and didn't it snow out there this week?
It did. We got a foot of snow like 2 days ago, so I think that actually helped quite a bit because it was wet, heavy snow. And there was a lot of it. There was 20 inches in the mountains. So,
News of the week is to formally apologize to our friend Aaron Lieberman, who I now call Mr. Lieberman, the executive director of IOGA. I did not mention the IOGA meeting when I mentioned the America Outdoors meeting, and I really should have talked more about the Idaho Outfit and Guides Association. So I just want to apologize to Aaron for not mentioning that meeting in December.
Yeah, dude. Way to fail that. And it was a good meeting. It was the best IOGA meeting we've had in years.
So it was great. Yeah, I was really, really, really pleased at that meeting.
So, for those who don't know, it's at Idaho Outfitters and Guides. It's an association that represents guides and outfitters in Idaho. And it's a meeting that we're trying to encourage more guides to go to talk about guide issues and things happening with river guides in the state of Idaho. Eric, you can probably talk about that more than I can.
Yeah, it was actually the original statewide guide outfitter trade organization in the country. This is the 65th annual meeting this year. The America Outdoors Association actually came out of IOGA. It was people in IOGA who started AO. Huh.
So, wow.
Tidbit.
Yeah. So anyway, Mr. Lieberman, I apologize for not mentioning the meeting.
Right on. Well, any other news of the week?
That's it.
Yeah, I don't really have any either. You know, holiday week, we have some snow. I've been skiing, not really thinking about boating. So there you go. Moving on to our big topic of the week. This week we have Ian from NRS, who is here to answer all of our questions about NRS. And
hello.
Basically just learn a little more about the organization. So, hey, Ian.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
And, Ian, I'm going to probably butcher your last name, too. Fodor Davis.
You got it right, and that doesn't happen very often, so I'm pretty impressed.
Well, you bought me dinner, so I felt like I'd get it right. I really put some effort into it.
I appreciate it.
So we're basically just going to ask Ian questions about NRS and kind of learn about the company that we all probably own at least one, if not 15 things from, and get to learn more about, you know, kind of one of the biggest river suppliers out there. Aaron, do you have some questions?
Yeah, you bet. So, yeah, Ian, so I'm curious, like, we used to call it Northwest Rafting. Is it still Northwest Rafting, or is it like now the name NRS? Like,
yeah, it's definitely NRS is the name of the brand. We're still technically Northwest River Supplies, but yeah, it's NRS as far as, you know, all intents and purposes go.
Oh, cool. And someone told me that you guys became employee owned not too long ago.
Yeah, we did. It's a pretty cool thing. We're basically fully employee owned now. Bill Parks, I believe, was kind of nearing his 80s, and he decided that he could either sell the company and retire, or he could keep it in the hands of the employees, and that's exactly what he did. So he converted it over to a Basically, the employees, you know, the ESOP, stock ownership plan, bought Bill out, and now we're all employee owners, which from the, you know, the shippers to the pickers to the Salesforce guys, it seems like it wouldn't be that big of a thing, but it is. It, you know, it feels really good. So yeah, we are fully employee owned.
So what does that mean? Like, I've heard that before. So like, if I got hired by NRS next week, would I become a part owner when I get hired? Do I have to buy somebody out, or?
Buy someone out. And keep in mind, guys, I don't know all this super well. I'm just a lowly rep, but I will do my best to answer these questions to the best of my ability. The way that I understand it is an ESOP is an employee stock ownership plan. There are a bunch of big pieces of stocks. They are broken up into really small pieces of stock. And all those stocks are fully controlled by NRS, the employees, and the board. So they're not publicly traded or anything like that. So if you were to be hired, then there, I believe, is a pool of stock shares that are, you know, that would be allocated to you over time. It's not like you all of a sudden are 100% invested in the company. You have to go through a probationary period, and then each year you are further vested into the company, basically.
If you quit, what happens? Do you have to sell your stock back?
Yeah.
Over they have a period of time where they buy the stock back from you. Okay. So they have a set period of time that they have in case they need it to purchase that stock back from you.
And then you guys choose who the board is too?
You know, I don't really know how that works, other than the board right now has still got Bill Parks on it, and his wife Donna and Todd, who's our purchaser, kind of the longstanding NRS higher ups, who really just have the employees in the company in mind. So I don't really know that it's ever really been like something that we even felt like we needed to vote on or anything like that. Everybody's really comfortable and happy with who's on the board as of now, and that's about my understanding of how the board works. That's not something that I'm really part of those meetings or anything.
Not yet.
Yeah.
So when you want to take over control of NRS, Ian, and like run the whole thing, like, do you have to get like the employee support below you, or you just have to get the board to want you to be like the guy in charge of everything?
Yeah. If I were to become king of NRS, I don't know that it's even really possible. I mean, the board makes decisions, but it's a fully employee-owned company, and everybody kind of, I think, like, has a say, unless someone were to come in and spend a bunch of money to buy it. And then in that case, I believe that everybody would just kind of see their shares come back to them, and then they're good to go. And again, this is all just kind of my understanding of it.
Hmm. Well, that's cool.
Do you think it makes employees happier? Sorry to interrupt, Aaron. Are people stoked to be owners?
I mean, absolutely. On one hand, it's a built-in retirement program. You know, when you retire, all those stock options that are privately held by NRS employees go into your bank account. So from a purely financial standpoint, absolutely. And then from a standpoint that you're an employee owner, there's just a little something there. I think that it adds a little bit of pep in everybody's step. It's, you know, for a really good example is my partner in the territory, my territory, Sarah, cares a huge amount about everything, not just my territory. So she will fix a problem in someone else's territory, or even on, you know, on the warehouser floor, or a retail type call, that she wouldn't normally deal with. So it just kind of like adds everybody to the playing board, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've just been curious how those work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a huge amount about it, but there's a great video, Zach. I'll send it to you after this, and you can take a look at it if you're interested in learning more about ESOPs and how they work.
So, Ian, tell us what your job is, like what your territory is, and what you do for NRS.
Yeah. So my territory, I run the outfitter side of things on the west coast of North America. We call it the commercial branch. And that is working with anybody and everybody that gets people on the water. So from a commercial outfitter that like you folks that would, you know, get someone on the Middle Fork or something like that, to a rental program, to a college outdoor program. Just really working with people on how to maximize their budget and also what gear I would and would not suggest. You know, I think the interesting thing about NRS is there's so many pieces of gear that aren't necessarily for the guide or the person that goes and boats every day. There's so much that's built around the recreational boater. That's pretty much what I do is I try to operate as the middleman between my customer and the kind of the higher ups, the decision makers, and make sure that things like custom boats are built right, suggest the right products, and solve problems when products aren't working. That's pretty much sums up my role at NRS.
Cool.
Sweet. And Ian, how many of you guys are there then? Like, there's doing about your job, and like, how do you like break it up? Like, you're the Western US. And then,
yeah, so there are four commercial reps, and those guys, we broke it up into my boss, who's the director of the commercial sales. His name is Gator, and he runs kind of Rockies and Four Corners as far as the commercial territory. And then we have Natalie and Mike, who run the East Coast, Northeast, and Southeast, respectively. And then we have a whole nother team that does retail rep work, like wholesale, working with companies like small specialty retailers or big box stores. So there's that whole side of things. And there's an international side as well, who you've been working with a little bit, Zach, for the Bhutan stuff. And they are the ones that make things happen as far as building distribution centers so that we can make gear more accessible in Europe and things like that. So those are, and then I guess there's also the rescue branch, which is growing, and we're expecting to see a lot of great things come out of our rescue department as we start to spend more R&D time on building rescue products. So those are the main branches aside from our retail. You know, you call into the 800 number and place an order over the phone. It's broken up to try to make it a manageable territory for each rep, but also they do a really good job of playing to our strengths. I'm not a person that does super well working in stores, just because I don't enjoy it as much, but I really enjoy working with my outfitters and guides. So yeah, that's kind of how it's broken up.
So you just bad-mouthing the retail stores.
No, I love our stores. They're our dealer network. They're what makes it possible for us. But I just wouldn't be, I think, a very good candidate for that type of.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, you're really good at what you do. You're really good at working with us. I appreciate working with you for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Tell me more about this rescue branch. Like, what do you get? What rescue projects does NRS make, and what are you guys planning to do?
There's a lot of things that I can't really talk about right now, but they're just new products. You know, we've had a rescue branch for a long time, and I think really from a standpoint of making better products, a little while ago we had a split is the wrong word, but we kind of changed up the way that things were running, so that we had this kind of different direction for different rep groups to take. So I can work with my commercial guys on building outfitter products that we believe in for outfitters. And same thing goes with the rescue team. For example, like new NRS pulleys that we didn't really do before. And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, you know, working on better river knives and better throw bags, and really just trying to make the best gear that we can for each different kind of category that we work in.
Would you say NRS is mainly a whitewater brand? Like, it feels like you guys are getting so big and doing so many things. Is it still primarily whitewater?
I would honestly say that we're more of a recreational boaters brand, because we are so big in the kind of REIs of the world. That's where a lot of our business is done. And we have so many products that are lifestyle apparel pieces or technical layering apparel pieces that work really well in that kind of space. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I would say Whitewater is wrapped into it, but we're a recreational paddle sports brand more than anything.
Which just kind of like covers up. It means like flat water. That includes like paddling lakes and the ocean. And it's not just Whitewater rivers, but like everything then.
Yeah, it's everything paddleboarding, you know, or everything paddle sports. We want to get as many people on the water as possible. You know, that's really what Bill Park's original mission was in 1972 when he was a business professor and he wanted to kind of put his money where his mouth was and start up a river company with products that he didn't see existing yet. And that's where things like the Bill's Bag came from.
The Bill's Bag. Wow. Yeah. That's there we go.
Yeah.
I've used them for 20 years and I never knew. I just like, yeah. Oh, the Bill's Bag. Yeah. I never knew the origin story. That in itself was reason to come today and to talk. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to provide something meaningful to you.
Ian, what's some Ian, cool what is... what's Oh, go ahead, Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, what's the thing that I think, or kind of two things. What's the thing that you're most excited about, like new product from an NRS standpoint as a company and organization? What are you guys really excited about? And then you personally, as a paddler, what is like the thing that is like your love thing from NRS or a new thing you're really excited about?
Yeah, there's a lot, a lot there. Let me kind of start with, as far as like what we as a company are excited about, we're really kind of in this transition phase. We just bought a new building. We just moved into a building that we custom built to fit our needs. Everything is now located under the same roof. It's much more modern. It's someplace that people want to go to work at. It's pretty, you know? So just from that standpoint, it's exciting for us to kind of like be turning this leaf, and that ties into everything that we're doing. You know, we're excited to see what the commercial team can do with some, you know, outfitter pieces of gear that frankly have kind of fallen by the wayside, like haven't really had a lot of attention paid to them for a while. So it's nice that each team kind of has a great soapbox to stand on and you know, communicate with their customers and figure out what the market needs. So I think that's something that we're all really excited about is really just see where we go and how we grow. We're a company full of people that might not all be incredible whitewater boaters or even really attracted to whitewater, but everybody likes to go paddling at the company. We have boaters ranging from a guy that likes to go stand up paddleboard on the weekends here and there on a lake to bass fishermen that are using our products to get into harder to reach areas to fish to the whitewater enthusiasts. I know it's kind of an umbrella blanket response, but there's so much for us to be excited about right now that I think that's about the best answer that I can give. As far as me personally, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm really passionate about at NRS, and there's a lot of things that I don't actually like. It just depends on the product and what it's meant for. For me, I would say, you know, I guided out of NRS boats for 5-6 years, and I fell in love with the boats and the rubber and how they function and their durability. So that's something that's always going to be high on my list. And then my family has owned NRS boats for a long time too. And then outside of that, you know, I really love our apparel. The paddle sports specific apparel has been something that hasn't really been done before. You know, seams that are placed in places that are not going to chafe you when you're paddling type thing. And a full layering system from sun wear to cold weather wear. So I'm really stoked on that as well. And then the only other thing that I'd add into that mix would probably be our frame system. Those are kind of the three categories that I'm most excited about with NRS. But there's a bunch of other stuff that I love, or might find a specific jacket, you know, PFD that I really like, even if I don't like all of the other ones. So that answered that question. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I think what Eric was asking too, like most of our listeners are into whitewater. Is there some new hot whitewater equipment that you want to talk about? Be like, hey, this is some new awesome boat or some new thing that whitewater people might be interested in. Is that
what you mean? I think the most exciting thing for us, as far as that goes, is the paddle cats and getting more into R2ing, production of R2 style boats, being involved in helping shape those and design those has been really fun for me personally. And then being able to have those crafts that are really meant for that whitewater enthusiast is pretty exciting. You know, we have a bunch of boats that work in a lot of different circumstances, but the paddle cat and the, it's called the High Five, is the 9.5 foot raft. Both of those are exciting for two reasons. One, because we're building a whitewater enthusiast's boat, and that's really designed around the idea of R2ing or R1ing. It's getting more and more popular, you know. We see a lot more people getting out and R1ing and R2ing and all that good stuff. So it's exciting on that standpoint, but it's also exciting to have something that hits the price point that they hit. When we bought Star, we really wanted to offer something that was a little bit more accessible to someone that might be a guide that might not have a lot of money, but still wants to have a boat.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you guys bought Star. Wow.
Yeah, we acquired them. I think it's 2 years now, I think.
Are you building the boats out of the material they used to use, or are you using your NRS material for their old products?
Do you guys remember the Outlaw brand from NRS, the PVC boats we were building?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We really liked how those boats functioned durability-wise and price point-wise and just the way that we built them, they were working out really well. So we put that construction style under the Star brand and changed the material to that 2000 denier PVC we were using, changed the construction to heat welding on all the seams. So really just kind of married the two brands in the best way we could. The Outlaw brand was its own brand, but Star is so much more widely recognized that it can and will be a better brand to kind of fit those things under.
So what did Star bring? Why did you purchase Star? Like, what part of Star? Was it just their name and like the amount of people they were reaching with their boats, or was there some of their design stuff that you guys were interested in too?
Yeah, there are some design things. You know, like the Slice is a, in my opinion, a great paddle raft or paddle cat. we got the rep, his name's Mike. We hired him on, and he's been spectacular with his knowledge of whitewater in general, but also working with customers. So there was some design stuff for sure, but you know, our factory down in Mexico, all the boats are hand built. It takes about a month for a boat to be built and then finished. So our production is really limited, even with a new factory with a lot more space and employees. It's limited to what we can do. So having the ability to produce more rafts is a positive thing for us. But there's also the whole idea of Hypalon versus PVC, and we needed to have a stiff PVC model. You know, it's not a super high-end raft, but I've rode a lot of water on them, and I think that they're pretty great for the price point. Even not for the price point.
Ian, what you're saying is most the NRS brand rafts are made in Mexico, but you're limited at protection and in production for NRS rafts. So the Star brand, which was Outlaw, is made, I'm guessing, in China, somewhere in Asia. And that you're saying the Star brand allows you to produce a lot more number of boats.
Yeah, produce more boats. And like I was talking about, get more boats to the target that needs them. You know, I think affordable. A lot of boaters would love to have, you know, I have a buddy that's a guide. This is a good example. He couldn't afford an NRS raft. He wanted to buy from us. He's always liked NRS as the company goes, took care of him with pro deals as a guide, all that good stuff, but he just couldn't afford a raft and he bought an Outlaw. But that's really, you know, it's the same thing. It's really the idea of providing something that's a more affordable price point. That's not a boat I'm not going to name any brands or anything, but this is not a boat that's going to fall apart within a trip, you know, or within a season. They still come with that, you know, 3-year warranty. So they're a boat that's more affordable, but still pretty solid.
So the last 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Three private seasons or commercial seasons.
You know, I have some customers that are running them commercially and I have yet to hear a complaint. Like I say, it's a 2000 denier PVC that's heat welded. I think probably the only issue is the floor is attached with battens. So some people have been a little concerned about the possibility of some kind of entrapment. We haven't seen anything like that happen and I've tested it a lot. So I think that it's not as big of an issue as some people think it could be. But yeah, to be super clear, we have that 3-season warranty, our 3-year warranty, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the boat's going to last for that long or for shorter than that. A lot of the time we see boats last a lot longer than their warranty. It depends on how people take care of them. When you have someone that leaves their boats out in the sun, whether it's outfitter or private boater, all season long, then those boats aren't going to last nearly as long, right? The great yellow oppressor, the UV rays are the worst thing that you can do to your raft. So depending on the care of the product, you can see them potentially last a lot longer than that.
We used the, I think, 15-footer last summer commercially and, you know, beat on it pretty good. And we had zero problems, like in a commercial summer. We probably used it more in a commercial summer than most people will in 5, you know, in a sort of private use standpoint. So
the 15-foot Star.
15-foot Star.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I had a question about that, Ian. Do you guys have one floor that you put in the 14 and the 15? Or is there actually a separate floor?
I believe that there is a different floor. We always try to make things, if something fits, you know, like the thwart size for the 15 and the 14 is the same. But when you have something that is a whole foot longer, we want that floor to fit the boat. So if it's something that will fit, that's already been made for a product, then yeah, we don't have to pattern it. And that's great. But I think in that situation, we do have a different floor for just about every raft, because the floor of the boat, you know, even if the width is the same, the length might not be, or the rocker might not be. So each Star raft, I think for the most part, I don't think there's any duplicates, but each Star raft has its own floor.
I just remember looking at the 15-foot floor looked small. And so I just remember thinking that may have been why, but who knows? There might be a performance reason I didn't understand too.
Yeah, you know, with drop stitch floors, if you build them too far out, then I think that they can kind of start to, since they're so stiff, they can kind of start to pull the rocker down a little bit, if that makes sense. So keeping them a little bit shorter is a better situation. It also allows for some people like to have their drain holes in the back, in the bow and stern, so they can punch their own drain holes there and have no risk of issue with anything that's going to be an inflatable part of the boat, if that makes sense.
So I think one thing that's really interesting about the Star, correct if I'm wrong, Ian, that it's a new process for making boats. You basically take a bucket boat, you make a bucket boat, you punch holes in the floor, and then you throw a drop stitch piece on top of that. So the drop stitch isn't like glued to the boat. It's sort of just attached on top of this bucket boat floor. So the water drops on top of this drop stitch, like flat thing, and goes down the sides and out the drain holes. Is that right?
For the most part, the big difference between these and a bucket boat floor is that we, you know, most bucket boats didn't have any kind of rise to the floor. It was hung right at the bottom of the boat.
Oh, so it's up a little bit too.
So these are actually hung pretty far up. Okay. So, and really that's for a couple reasons. One, you know, the boat rides a little bit more on rails. It rides a little bit more on the tubes. So it helps with tracking. Oh man, I lost my train of thought. Okay. But yeah, it's also attached with battens. So it's actually
What's a batten?
You know how our thwarts are attached?
Oh, those like plastic things that you have to push through.
Yeah, so it's attached with six of those. So it is actually physically attached.
It's physically attached, but it also is removable. I think that's what's really unique about these designs. Like if you look at a Moravia drop stitch floor, it's like glued into the boat. That floor is staying there forever, right?
Yep.
Where this, that floor is actually removable, which I think the advantages are, one, if you're traveling, you could take the floor out and travel with it separately, right? To make the boat lighter. Two, if you blow the floor, you just buy a new floor piece and put it in. You don't have to like glue a new floor in, which is incredibly expensive.
And yeah, definitely.
I'm guessing it's also way less expensive too for manufacturing.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, the whole point of the brand is to offer a less expensive but still quality product. And yeah, it does kind of all those things. It adds to our ability to have a less expensive piece, but it also we're also able to keep that price down, because if we have a floor issue, which a lot of boats, the main issue that they'll see is floors over anything else. But if we do have a floor issue, then yeah, we can just send a new floor over. So for all the reasons you just mentioned, we're really liking having the removable floors.
So can you tell us a little more about the Paddle Cat, and like, how big is it? And is that all material then too? Like, what's the deal with that design? Is that like, what are those old black boats that we all see around that guy used to make in his garage? Why can't I think of the name of them?
Shredders?
The Shredder. Is it like a Shredder basically? Is it like that type of design?
You know, I think that everybody that builds a Paddle Cat will always be tied to the Shredders, right?
Totally.
Such a cool boat. Yeah, my first experience with a Shredder was when I was 14 on the Middle Fork watching two guys R2 the whole thing, and it just made me want to hop in and learn how to paddle. So our Paddle Cat, it comes in two different sizes. There's the Slice and the Slice XL. And the Slice XL is 12 foot 8 inches. And the Slice itself, the standard one, is 11, I'm sorry, feet, not inches, 11 feet. So the Slice XL is built to potentially have up to four paddlers. And the Slice is really built more to accommodate the R2 Shredder type boater.
It's a sweet boat. I mean,
these weigh. Yeah, sorry.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Aaron. How much these boats weigh?
Yeah.
I'm on the website right now. It's 66 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
The XL or the regular?
That is the regular, I believe. Yeah, that's the regular. Yeah. 79 pounds for the XL.
Okay, and then the High Five is around the same weight, or is that's a little heavier?
I think it is a little heavier. It comes in at 87 pounds, but it's still a boat that I can easily like shoulder and walk down to the river if I'm gonna be R1ing it, you know.
I mean, you're pretty burly though, Ian. Not the average person can carry that much weight.
That's
not
a good point.
Not everybody's an Ian.
Not everybody's an
Ian. The other thing we've talked on this show about multiple times is like destination boating is definitely a thing people like to do. And having a boat where I don't know if you take the floor out how much the height is, but if you can get that boat to be under 50 pounds so it can be a normal check bag, it's amazing. The opportunity. So it's cool that you guys are working in that direction. Hopefully you guys will have a boat like that at some point that, you know, you can easily take the floor out like you do and then just roll it up. And then you can just check it as your checked bag, and it doesn't cost you any extra, and there's no hassles. So you could go, you know, run some remote river in some other country and then bring it back.
Yeah, it's a really good thought. And in all honesty, you know, when we got Star, I think we really just wanted to be really successful with the launch of the product. And now that we do feel like we're successful. We're having a great run with Star, and we're really loving the products. I think that now we are going to be able to look at some R&D and see what else we can do with that. Like I say, you know, tying back to your previous question, we're just excited in general about the direction of the companies, Worsey, Star, and NRS all moving forward and see where things go. So I think that there is benefit, you know, a potential for that in the future, for a lighter type bow that you can disassemble and get over to, you know, Russia or Iran or some of those places that are really hard to get to.
We attacked Iran last night. We're not going to Iran anytime soon. Just so you know.
Yeah. That's very true.
Before yesterday, which was maybe an option, but That's not. That's,
yeah. You know. Which is bumming me out because I've been wanting to do some ski touring trips there for years.
Yeah. It's supposed to be just amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, skiing, but rafting too. There's so many rivers over there that really haven't been touched. It's been something that's on my list for so long. But yeah, we're not going to be making it over there anytime soon.
We're a ways out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sadly. Unless you want to join special forces, that's probably the best way to go rafting in Iran right now.
Probably.
Hey, so Ian, the Star Slice, we've actually talked about it a little bit on previous podcasts, and we had a viewer question about it because I expressed some issues with it personally. I just want to pass them on to you, get some feedback on that boat. I used the Star Slice before you guys bought Star, and that one, it was an amazing boat. The design is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That one was 49 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So the when you guys bought the company, when you bought Star, then your replacement one weighs more. So I was super stoked on the 49-pound one because you could travel. We took it over to Bhutan and it's still there, and we use it over there. But one other thing is those zippers you guys have in the front and the back, there's like little compartments to put gear in the mm-hmm. front and the back. In this previous one, that was a waterproof zipper. And so it was a dry bag. And your new ones are not waterproof. And I worry on that boat that the zippers will break because zippers like to break. And then if they do, the water will fill in that compartment. Does that make sense? Like it'll become like a scoop.
I do. And I have an answer for that if you're done with your question.
So I just want to pass on my feedback on the boat. Like I wish, like I, if I was to make it better, it would definitely be like Aaron said, lighter, like mm-hmm. the previous model, and then making that a waterproof zipper. And with those two things, it's a sweet boat.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was previously talking about when we took over the Star brand, we added a lot of denier. We have a 2000 denier product now that's so burly, but it's also, you're right. It's quite a bit heavier.
Is that to make it, hold on, let me just ask, is that to make it more puncture resistant or long-term more durable?
Both.
Or both. Okay. So because it's thicker material, the boat should last a lot longer.
I think in general, that's really where what denier means. But thickness, you have to have the right material too, right? You have to have you can have a 2000 denier horrible material that falls apart really easily. We wanted this to be built to be as durable as it could be for an outfitter. And if it can fit an outfitter's needs durability wise, then it can fit a private boater's needs.
So you chose durability over weight.
Yeah, and then moving forward, you know, hopefully we can get to that, like I was talking about, get to that point where we can look at, well, let's make a model that's you know, able to be checked as a normal bag type thing.
The zipper.
Yeah, as far as the zipper goes, that was a really conscious decision. And really what it comes down to is it's so much more expensive to put a dry suit zipper on that than it is for a regular zipper, and the dry suit zipper was failing quite often. So we put drain holes in that pocket and just decided to have a storage compartment, and you can put a dry bag in it easily. But you know, if water does get through, which it will, then there are drain holes down at the bottom of it, so it will not spill water and hold.
I didn't know there were drain holes in there.
Yep.
I'm looking at the website now. There's actually, it's super smart. There's handles underneath. I'm looking underneath it. Mm-hmm. There's handles underneath it for carrying it too, which is pretty smart.
Mm-hmm. Which is really, it's really convenient for carrying those things around, having those handles there.
Have you tried this boat, Eric?
Yeah, we had one last summer down at the Oregon office to test out. So I got to paddle it a decent amount. We had the XL. And I really liked it until you put four people in it. And then I didn't like it very much. It sat really low.
I think that it probably
with four decently weighted people. You know, the floor was pretty far down in the water and it slowed the thing down a lot. But until you did that, like with two people, it was awesome. It was super fun.
Yeah, I think that you're spot on there. I think that the idea was to have a smaller and a bigger, but you know, in the future, seeing a 14-foot version of this, I don't think is out of the question at all. Being able to have that paddle cat that can fit four people comfortably and still have performance is pretty important.
I feel like cataracts, just in general, though, you start putting some weight in them and they just sit so low in the water, they're really hard to turn. Like, we used to run paddle cats down in Chile and we had that same problem. And they were huge boats too. They were like 70-foot cats. We had four paddlers in them, some with an oar frame in the back, but they were still so heavy that they would they would track and they would go through anything, but you maneuvering them around was a challenge.
You know, I think my answer to that, I totally agree with you. And when it comes down to it, if you're going to go shopping for a refrigerator, you're not going to go pick it up in your Miata, right? You're going to pick it up in a truck. Yeah. And I think that so many people are kind of falsely led to the belief that cataracts work great as a gear boat. They don't. They can function.
Well said, man. Totally. Stand by it. Oh gosh. How often do we see that? Those overloaded cataracts just out of control.
Quite often. Yeah.
Oh man.
But you know, it's just physics. It's displacement and the amount of surface area. And when you have a floor, that adds so much more surface area and displacement factor for your boat. So it's never going to be the best gear boat in the world. But they can function in some places really well. It just depends on the river and depends on the person too. You know, there's some people that really highly disagree with me and think that cats are the best gear boats. And they can think that.
Have you seen any commercial outfitter run commercial cataract gear boats?
So I got this one. There's a commercial outfitter in a section river that I run that runs a, like, you know, 20-foot regular geared boat raft, but without a floor. Mm-hmm. He has removed the floor and runs it floorless. So it's essentially a cat that wraps around the ends.
Interesting.
And he swears by it. Swears by it.
One thing that I could see with that is that it could be really fast. And especially on like the lower, there's so much to gear boaters trying to move quickly.
Yeah, it's super interesting. But you maintain the storage capacity on the ends that you would lose on a traditional cat. I have no idea if I'd like it or hate it, but I thought it was interesting for sure.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I'd be curious to see it, you know, row it if I could.
I generally agree with you guys that cat boats shouldn't be gear boats. I'm sure we're going to annoy a lot of people out there who think we're idiots, which we may be. But you should. I mean, we definitely say things that are incorrect or our opinions that are insult people. But we try not to. Anyway, you guys do know that the best sweep boats on the Middle Fork right now are cat boats. People are finding cat boats are the easiest to run.
Well, you solve your displacement problem if you just run big enough tubes.
Yeah,
so, I've got a cat with 38-inch tubes that I run as a gear boat. You just got to get big enough tubes that you get rid of the displacement problem.
And that's what I was saying earlier. You know, like it really is a time and place in river for the Middle Fork. I think it does make sense because there's so many opportunities to split rocks. There's so many opportunities where a cat could actually be really good for you. And all you have to do is make sure your tubes are really, really soft and you're in pretty good shape.
And the sweeps there, the floor of a sweep is not helping with displacement. You don't usually run inflated floors on your sweeps. So it's pretty much the rounded sweeps are kind of like we were talking about that 20-foot gear boat. I don't really feel like they count as a raft because they don't have that.
Some amalgamation of a raft and a cat somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Ian, we have only a few minutes left. I want to ask you about this High Five boat. I'm looking at on your website. I hadn't heard about it until you just mentioned it. So is that intended as like an R2 or R1 boat? Kind of like, is it sort of like a mini me?
Yeah. So I helped with kind of the specs, the design of that. And it was meant, one, to give us an R2 boat, to give us a smaller craft. There's some people that are really interested in them for personal fishing boats as well. But the whole shape of it is designed to punch holes really well. And in my testing, I tested everything from R1-ing it to R5-ing it. And R5 on the payette was a little spicy. It still held up. We were able to get through without any swims or anything. it's I wouldn't say that it's an answer to a mini-me. I think that just so many other manufacturers were building small boats and we didn't have one. And with Star, yeah. we were able to put some new products on the market and really see, well, you know, is this our market? Does this work for us? And it's
but it's that same class, right? Like this is the same class of boat as like a mini-me.
Yeah, that same idea of that R2 or R1 type boat. Yeah, it's really built around that.
Why does it have so much rocker?
Specifically, purely just to bust holes, like really built around that.
Okay. So when we did a trip down in Australia, we had a Star boat down there that my friends were R2ing it. I thought it was a Hypalon one though. It was a little one. Did Star used to make Hypalon like little 10-footers too?
Because that thing was crazy. Not that I've ever heard of. You know, there's a possibility.
He was able to throw it on his back. Yeah.
Sorry, what was that?
I was going to say, he was able to, for the portages, we were down on the Franklin, he was able to just throw it on his back and carry it around, roll it up and carry it around. It was so light. Nice. But I think it was lighter than 70 pounds, 60, whatever, 87 pounds.
So I don't think it was Hypalon Air. They made PVC. They had a factory in South Korea, and they made these PVC boats there that were pretty light.
Okay.
And so it was a very Hypalon like, you might think it's Hypalon by looking at it. It
looked like Hypalon. Maybe it was PVC because it looked like it rolled really easily and it didn't seem that stiff. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. What it was.
So, well, cool. We're kind of running towards the end. Do you guys have any last minute questions before we head on to Gear of the Week?
I don't think so. I don't think I have any questions for you guys. Thank you guys again so much for firing all the questions over. It's been fun.
Yeah. Ian, thanks for joining us. I gotta say the coolest thing, I didn't actually see this, but I saw a photo of it after our show last month, the new cornhole game you guys made.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, that's such a good idea. Basically, you guys made a cornhole, whatever those things are, goal out of drop stitch. So it's an inflatable cornhole game.
So I played it while I was there, and I still want one, Ian. I got to get that added to my order. But it is the hardest cornhole
game really you will ever
play.
Yeah, it's really
because they bounce off. Like, you know, like you hit wood and it stops. These ones don't. They just hit and ping. Like you got a nail. It's like hole in one, or it's probably shooting off the side. But it's super fun.
Yeah,
and it is awesome for trips.
And I think, you know, the other thing that will make a difference is when it's tacked down and it's not allowed to rebound as much off the ground, and sand will also have that dampening effect. I think it'll still be bouncy, but not as bouncy. So they'll have stakes with them, so we can actually like stake them into the sand so they don't blow away too. So yeah, it's more just like, it was done almost as not a joke, but as kind of like this will be fun to take to the show. And then we were kind of like, well, let's figure out a patent for this, because this is actually really cool. So we're moving on with production of those for I think largely it'll be outfitters. But I mean, I personally would take one on every trip that I go on. So,
yeah, I think everybody needs this.
Yeah, I'm into it. Cool.
Did you say patent or did you say pattern?
Patent pending.
You're patenting it.
I believe so. That's the last I heard.
That's hardcore. Well, guys, you want to move on to Gear of the Week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's
Gear of the Week.
Ian, this is where we just like talk about like our favorite piece of Gear of the Week. It can be anything. It's just like it's like our closing like thing of the week. So if you don't have anything already, you have a few minutes to think of something.
Okay.
Like I'm gonna do. So why doesn't somebody else go first?
I have one. So I haven't used this yet, but Mr. Lieberman or Aaron got off. He just spent like 3 days or 4 days down Lower Salmon. Got off like yesterday. And he came off his trip and he is swearing by this thing. And he found it because he guest guided for Agapa up on the main a couple trips last summer, and they had one. And that's kind of where he got it. But it's called the clam tent. And you just Google it. I guess this company, they started out making ice fishing shelters. And there are these like expanding kind of pop-up things that you can set up in like 30-40 seconds, and they have insulated ones for ice fishing that are up to like 11 feet in circumference, and like, you know, 8 feet tall on the inside, but you can with two people literally just like scale them out and pop them up like instantly. And then they have more summer oriented ones, which is what he had, with like wind sides on it. And again, I haven't seen it, but he says it's burly, like it would last operating it in the, you know, in the sand and stuff, but sets up instantly. And the idea of an insulated one is pretty appealing for like early season cold weather trips. If you had a place you'd go hide out if the weather turned on you that you could set up in 60 seconds.
So is that a floorless tent? Is that what it is?
They are. Yeah. So the one that he used and like the, it's kind of like a screen one. Like it looks like a summer one. That one is floorless. The ice fishing ones that are insulated, which are actually, I think, kind of appealing in some ways. Some of those have floors and some don't, or you can get them so you can add floors on or something. I did a little research on it last night for a while, but it was pretty intriguing for like, you know, a cold weather Illinois thing, just like this giant thing you could set up and live in. That's insulated around the sides.
Zach would probably need a wood stove chimney to be interested in that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome addition.
Yeah. So the clam tent.
Cool.
And if you start looking for websites, they have different ones for the summer ones and the ice fishing ones. So you got to do a little hunting.
Yeah, I just found the website. It's pretty cool. I'll put a good link to it on our website and on the show notes. I'm ready for my gear of the week. I got one. It's the NRS Longhorn frame. It's just a simple day frame that I think everybody should own if you row. If you go take your oar boat out and you don't want to use your big frame for a day trip, this frame is like super simple, super easy, pretty affordable, and I have a bunch of them. So I'd highly recommend the NRS Longhorn frame.
Yeah. Sort of the classic. Cool.
Yeah, well, classic, simple.
I'm kissing NRS butt here too. I'll say the piece of clothing. I'm in Hawaii right now. Even if you didn't know it, I'm living in Hawaii this winter, and piece of gear I use pretty much every day. Yeah, it's awful. Is my NRS hoodie. I use it for surfing and it's unbelievable. Like it's kind of a stretchier material than the other hoodies I have. Mm-hmm. And I've used it body surfing and I use it surfing every day. It's an incredible piece of gear. And I'm really excited about how well I can swim in it. Like that's something I didn't realize how much better it performed in that area than my other hoodies do, which just like they kind of cling more and they don't have that same elasticity that this one has.
So what color is it? Psyched.
It's like a light blue. Actually, Sierra Mac gave it to me last year, so I'm advertising for Sierra Mac every time I go out there. It's fantastic. I nice. Need it. Yeah, it's starting to get a little worn, but I've been really happy with it.
Those are so sweet. We did some logoed ones for our staff, and they loved them.
Yeah,
they wear them all the time.
Yeah, it's great.
Good piece of gear.
Ian, do you have any gear of the week?
Yeah, it's very similar. Really funny that you mentioned that because my gear of the week, I've been using it all the time. I'm obviously one of the NRS reps, so I have to kiss NRS butt a little bit. But I really have been loving the thicker version of that hoodie. It's the lightweight hoodie. I've been using it a lot in my splitboarding missions. And it's just like the perfect piece of gear to take the chill off or go into the bar. It's really comfortable and really stretchy, and it doesn't smell after I've been wearing it for like 3 weeks. And my wife would definitely tell me if it did.
Wait, come on. It doesn't smell. Wait, come on.
Seriously. It doesn't.
They smell.
It doesn't smell. It's incredible.
They smell.
It must just be you, Ian. You must just not smell.
I'm gorgeous, and you know, I don't smell. I sparkle, but no. I mean, as far as like material goes that I've used, the smell factor is really fantastic on these. It's a hoodie as well. Apologies on that, but yeah, that's what I've been using lately a lot, and I've been loving it.
Very cool. Right on. Well, Ian, thanks so much for joining us today and coming and talking about NRS and everything else. And Aaron, thanks for being a guest host and filling in for Priscilla while she's out doing whatever she's doing. And thank you guys for listening. Thanks everybody for listening. Hopefully you've been on your way out to go boating. There's water everywhere, so go enjoy it. And we'll be back again next week.
Have fun. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Ian. Looking fine.
Gonna float me into a new state.